I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Bill Stenson is the author of a new novel, Ordinary Strangers. It is the winner of the fourth Great BC Novel Contest for Mother Tongue Publishing. The book follows Sage and Della Howard as they drive from Hope to Fernie in August 1971. They lose their dog, and in the search they find a baby in the woods. The story unfolds as the years pass, and the Howards raise Stacy as their own. I'll get Mr. Stenson, who joins me now, to tell us as much as he'd like about his book and its setting in the interior of the province. It's an area of the province that he knows well, as Bill Stenson was born in Nelson. He went to a one-room schoolhouse on Thetis Island and grew up on a small farm in Duncan. He was a teacher of English and creative writing at various island high schools, the Victoria School of Writing and the University of Victoria. He co-founded the Claremont Review. He has authored a short story collection, Translating Women, and two novels, Zovoboda and Hani and Her Brother. He's written for sundry publications and joined me earlier this month from his home in the Cowichan Valley. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Bill Stenson. Mr. Stenson, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So when Mona, your publisher, sent me the book, I knew of your name, not because of your previous books, but because of a website that you and your, I guess you and your wife ran, CanadianMemoirs.com.
Well, what happened was I was running the website because of an interest that I had in memoirs and memoir writing, and I was helping a few people to write memoirs, and I was interested in the whole genre of memoir writing, so I was interviewing some prominent memorists, and we were having a good time with it. But what happened was the site got very, very popular, and it got hacked somehow. And by the time it got hacked, it just felt like it wasn't worth revitalizing for me, like the amount of time that it was taking for me away from my own writing. So it was kind of like forced a decision upon me, and I decided to abandon it at that time. But I did enjoy it for the time period that I was involved with Canadian Memoirs, and I certainly learned a lot from the writers that I interviewed.
I remember I came across it, and I was enjoying the work that you were doing.
Yeah, no, I think it was a worthwhile project, and we interviewed, you know, writers from all over the world. It wasn't just Canadian memoirists, but it was a worthwhile project, and I enjoyed it. And the guy explained to me, this is what happens when you're, when your site gets when you're small, nobody cares, but when you get to be a bigger fish, then people come out and they try to screw around with what you're doing, and that's what happened, and I just wasn't prepared to repair it all and pay for the kind of security software I would have had to put it back up again.
Right, right. So I guess you've also taken the time to write yourself, and this new novel, Ordinary Strangers, has just come out. It begins in 1971, and when does it go to?
Well, it goes into the 80s because one of the main characters, Stacy, gets to be about 17 years of age before the novel comes to a close.
And it's set in small-town British Columbia, which is unique in the sense that I talk to a lot of British Columbia authors all the time, and most of the books are either set, say, on the coast or in Vancouver. There are very few that are set, say, in the interior of the province.
Yeah, it seems that way. Most of my writing, I would say, has been set on Vancouver Island, but this particular story begins in Hope, and most of it takes place in Fernie, B.C. There's a small portion of it takes place in San Jose, California as well, but most of the novel set in Fernie, and Fernie was chosen for a couple of reasons. One, it's quite a charming town, but more importantly, it's a town, especially when the novel was set, that was very secluded, and it suited the purposes of the two main adult characters who wanted to live their life in as much seclusion as they possibly could.
There's something as I'm reading the book that I'm getting, I mean, other than the characters and what happens to them, really about the setting, and because I've never really traveled that much of this province. I've lived in Vancouver my whole life. But places that you talk about in the book, there's something comforting, may not be the right word, but there's something familiar about them.
Well, I would hope that's the case. I definitely try to I always go to wherever it is my novel is set. For example, I've many people in Vancouver going to the interior have been through Hope many, many times, mm-hmm. and I'm one of them. And also, I when I chose Fernie, I went to Fernie and I did quite a bit of research, did a walking tour of the town, talked to local archivists and so on, and got a real sense of the town itself. And I even went to San Jose, even though a very small portion of the novel set there. But wherever the novel set, I like to have a feel for the environment in which I'm writing. So I hope it comes through in the writing.
And it's not just the, let's say, the places or what it's like, but what the people are like too. I think that comes through from what I've read so far of the book. And you get that sense today, what it might have been, say, 40 years ago?
Yeah, for sure. You know, people, generally the values that people held back then were somewhat different than they are now, for sure. Like, the whole social barometer has changed, and also the information access has changed. And that's one of the reasons that I set the novel in the time period that I did, was because for the sort of the dramatic setup for the novel. If it were set in modern times, the novel would be quite a different read, because information of all kinds is so accessible nowadays, so trackable. Whereas back then, most people went to the library to find out what they needed to know.
And I guess a couple finding a baby.
Yeah.
And taking it with them and to where they're going next, as Sage and Della do. It's kind of hard to do nowadays, right?
It would be harder. It would be harder, for sure. Yes, I think if the same basic premise of the novel were to be written today, it would have a different tone, and some of the events would have to be altered, for sure.
So Sage and Della moved to Fernie to work and start a new life. How old are they?
They're in their 30s. They got together later in life. Della herself was married at one point, and then not married. She really wasn't married much at all. She didn't get together with the guy after the wedding, and he just ran away. And so she spent almost a decade without being close to anyone, and then she meets up with Sage, who ironically was the best man at her wedding, and they end up getting together. So when they get together, they're older and perhaps should be wiser, but they're compelled by certain needs, especially Della, that she has to take on certain events in her life that perhaps she wouldn't have at 20 and probably wouldn't have at 45.
And so they find that this child, as they're looking for their dog that gets lost. And would you take it from there? What do they do with the kid afterwards?
Well, yeah, they're on their way to Fernie, because Sage has found work there. He's a very itinerant worker. He's mm-hmm. he's never been very reliable, and now he's married. He feels like the chains are shackling him somewhat. He's not really that thrilled about going to Fernie, and for various reasons they haven't been able to have children. And Della wants nothing more in her life than to be a mother. This is such a compelling drive that she has, and many women have it, of course, but she feels like her time is running out, perhaps almost has run out, and she's worried. And when this opportunity occurs, she acts and thinks about the consequences later. And by the time the consequences become evident, it feels like it's almost at a point of no return for them. And that's where the novel moves forward from that point, because they do not know really what they can do except try to move forward.
Now, you were born in Nelson, I understand. Is that right?
Yes, I was born in Nelson, but I moved to the coast when I was quite young. But I have you know, I have a strong feeling for the Kootenays for sure, which, you know, Pernie's not that far from Nelson. And I did have a previous novel based on the Duke of Ors that was set around Nelson.
And so when you write a book like this, are you in a way revisiting a place that you knew once?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think often, you know, when you meet people, say, on the West Coast that move here and they're from somewhere else in the country, they find the rain depressing. Mm. And if you meet somebody who was born here, they often embrace the rain. And there's something about the environment in which we're raised, even for the very first few years, that sticks with you, I think. And so the feel and the smell in the fall in particular in the Kootenays, I can still recall, even though I've been back, of course, to do research for my work. But the actual living there, I haven't lived there as an adult, but I still have a strong sense of the environment just based on the first few years of my life living there.
The theme of what family means is something that's worked through in the book, and I'm curious to know, was there something that you as the author wanted to say?
You know, I'm not so sure that I tend not to write with the intention of saying anything in particular. I tend not to write a novel that has any kind of a political agenda or anything like that. I try to write a story that is compelling and perhaps, hopefully anyway, germane to the day, you know, that it's written. Mm-hmm. But what it actually tells people is up to the reader what they take away. And I, from my experience of writing so far, it's very interesting because different readers take, you know, different things from your work, and they all seem very real and very compatible with what is set down on the page, but they can be very different views that they choose to take away from your writing.
Well, what's that like to find out, say, something that a reader has taken away from the book that may not have even crossed your mind as you were writing it? Because writing is a very solitary process. Once it gets out there and it's taken a life of its own, as you who has spent a lot of time with it, I mean, is that fun to hear? Is that interesting at least?
Yeah, it's both interesting and fun, and I would say to some extent gratifying, you know. And I know that I've been on the other end of that equation myself. I remember one time mentioning to this poet how I particularly, her name was Patricia Young, and I remember mentioning to her how this one poem that she wrote, I found that the magic in the poem was the silence that was created after the broken window, the house's broken window had shattered. And she looked at me like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Right. So I think what happens is when you write a story that seems to come from some source, and you write it, and what it ends up meaning to various people is quite naturally going to vary. I mean, we're all different. We all come to a work of art, you know, with our own, you know, predilections. And so therefore, the summations that we make about what we've read or what we've seen or whatever is bound to be different. But I would say it's definitely interesting, and as a writer, definitely gratifying.
So when you've made, I understand, a couple of appearances for the book already.
Yeah.
I'm assuming when you do that, you're talking to people who haven't read the book yet. What do you choose to read from it?
Well, novels, yeah, short stories are really a lot of fun to launch because you just pick a short story, you go to a different town, you pick a different short story, you read it, and it's away you go. But a novel, it's a bit dicey. So for the most part, I've read in Vancouver and Victoria and Kelowna and Vernon and Fernie and Salt Spring Island. And usually what I do with a novel is I read the first chapter, which I've done three times. But when I read in Fernie, I read a little bit further into the book, which was a description of the town of Fernie itself, because I thought the locals might enjoy that description. And then I read, actually, at their reading, I read the second chapter where Della and Sage get together. And I think it worked quite well. But generally speaking, it's a problem with a novel because, I've been to readings where novelists will go to great lengths to explain, the part that they're going to read on page 173 and all that's happened that leads up to make this little part of the novel compelling. And it just seems a bit tedious. So I usually just go with the beginning of the book.
And the book won the fourth Great BC Novel Contest. What was it like working with Mona Fertig and the folks at Mother Tongue?
I just don't think I can say enough good things about the treatment that I've received. They're very, very professional, very thorough, very supportive, and, I would say Mona is willing to do just about anything she can to help you, promote the book and give you a chance to showcase the work. So I'm very, very impressed with Mother Tongue Publishing.
I read somewhere that you taught for many years, high school, both high school and at university, as well as the Victoria School of Writing.
Right.
Do you teach much now?
I don't much now. But apparently, I'm going to be presenting at the Word on the Lake series in the spring in Sicamouse, and I think I'm going to be presenting on Galliano Island later this winter. So sometimes, I'll be asked to make a presentation for, some kind of aspect of writing, and usually when I'm asked, I'm quite willing to do so, but for the most part, I'm quite content focusing on my own writing at this point.
I read a review that you gave recently, and you talked about how much you like writing and being a writer. You write every day, I understand.
I do something with writing absolutely every day. I should make it clear that, to me, reading is also part of the writing process.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly reading. I read less when I'm deeply involved in creating something. I may read one novel a month when I'm writing, and I might read four or five when I'm editing. But I'm always reading, I'm always editing, I'm always doing something with writing. To me, it feels like if I don't spend some time on the process every day, it doesn't feel like I've earned the right to go to sleep.
Speaking of reading, I was on your website, and we share an affinity for bookstores.
Oh.
And you, I guess you recently visited Nashville, is that right?
Yes, we did. Yeah, yeah. We went down to Nashville. We were, it was just a wonderful week we spent there, and I love bookstores. I love particularly independent bookstores, but really all bookstores, secondhand bookstores, new bookstores, a mix of them all. They all have a certain atmosphere, and a lot of prominent bookstores in many cities now have become almost like cultural icons for literary arts. They don't just sell books; they present readings. They have, coffee. They make it a sort of a meeting place for the public, and I really love that aspect of the business now.
And isn't that interesting, Bill, that we were told, say, 20 years ago that books were on their way out, that we were going to be reading on our phones and the sort of way, when we are.
Yeah.
But the interest in the tactile book, I mean, that's remained the same, if not has increased, right?
Yeah, I think it's done very well, actually. There was a lull for a few years, and I think a lot of publishers were worried. They would say, you've got to get your book on an e-book format right away because this is the way it's going. And I think there are people, like when you're going on a holiday, it's great if you can download four or five books on a tablet and away you go. That's to me, the logical application for that medium. But people still love to have the book in their hands, and they love to be able to read it and finger through it and take their time. And I really can't see that changing anytime soon.
So, unlike a lot of authors that I talk to, you're unique in that you write at night.
Yes.
A lot of people that I talk to say that they like writing in the morning.
Right.
But for you, the night works best, right?
Yeah, I think that it may have. I've always been more of a night person, and I think it started when I was busy teaching. I would teach all day, come home, walk the dog, help with the kids, supper, clean up, whatever. Do my marking, and then it would be, 10:30, 11 at night, and everybody would go to bed, and it would be nice and quiet, and I would have maybe only 45 minutes or an hour, but I would sit down and do some writing. So I got into the habit of doing it late at night, and It's not that I don't write in the daytime. I do. Yeah. Just an hour or so ago, I was deeply involved in editing another novel. So I do work in the daytime, but I work almost every night, probably from about 12 to 2, when everything, the world has gone quiet and my mind comes alive.
Yeah. As I told you before we started, I'm starting the book, and I'm into it now. One of the things that I'm contending with is Sage and Della. When I read of them, I don't know if I like them or not.
Yes, I know.
And so, as you as the writer, I mean, do you have to like your character? I guess you don't have to like your characters to write them, do you?
No, I don't think you do. I think that's one of the things I learned from a writer by the name of Bill Gaston, who's, you know, quite well known. And a lot of his so-called protagonists have so many flaws. You just sort of think, oh my God, they make almost make your skin crawl. And Della and Sage, I don't think are necessarily that far along in that dimension, but they're problematic. I mean, it's hard to cheer. You cheer them on in parts, but I think it's hard to cheer them on when you see what it is they're doing, because they are very much self-serving and take advantage of other people on the way. And, of course, a lot of people are like that, that the powers of rationalization are quite astounding in the human mind.
Well, you've written something so compelling that I don't get a chance, unfortunately, because of time, to finish the books that I've started. That I have to read for the show, but man, I can't wait to get to this, to get back to this book and finish it, because I...
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, well, thank you. I've been getting that kind of feedback from everyone who's read it, so I'm quite happy, because that's, of course, what you're looking for as a writer, is you want people to read your book, and so far things have been going quite well.
Well, congratulations on the book, Bill, and good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it very much.
The book is called Ordinary Strangers. Mother Tongue Publishing is who's responsible for it. It's the winner of the fourth Great BC Novel Contest. Bill Stenson joined me on the line from his home in the Cowichan Valley in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.